Everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Tuesday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky, behind a triple-double from Anthony Davis, the Lakers polish off a totally conventional 4-2 road trip heading into the trade deadline. That's next.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, no matter how or where you get your podcast. This one's always free and never behind a paywall. And Locked On Lakers, Andy, is now where 23,000 subscribers go to hang out and talk Lakers. And man alive, are those 23,000 people going to be very, very busy over the next couple days, because not only have the Lakers moved two games over 500 after they beat the Hornets in Charlotte to finish off the road trip. Final score there, 124-118. But Andy, over the next couple of days, we've got both the trade deadline coming up on Thursday. It's also Kobe Bryant statue reveal night on Thursday. So a lot to get into. I want to let everybody know today's episode is brought to you by FanDuel. Make every moment more. Right now, new customers get $200 in bonus bets if your bet of $5 or a first bet of $5 or more wins. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn to get started. Totally, as it looked after the Lakers were blown out in Houston and Atlanta, that they would absolutely finish 4-2 on this trip. I had no doubt in my mind, Andy.
I've said this many times. This is a really difficult team to get a beat on. Mm-hmm. Because even in finishing out this trip 4-2, which success, full stop, period. Like, that is a successful road trip. I don't care how you get the four wins out of those six. If you get four wins on a six-game road trip, that even if it seems like all gimmies, but this road trip was not, that is really successful. That said, this win over the Hornets tonight, 124-118, that felt like it was a rout in the making and then turned into, seriously, like,
it got a little tight.
This down the stretch wasn't even one of those, yeah, they're going to win this game, but they're just making this more complicated than need be. I'm not going to lie. In the last couple of minutes, I was getting concerned. Are they actually going to win this game?
Maybe it was me with like the false confidence that comes from a win in Boston and a win in New York. But I was like, I don't think they're going to lose. I was never really concerned that they were going to lose. Now, if they were playing a better team, maybe. But, you know.
It's that they weren't playing a better team that made me nervous that they would lose, because that is often what they do.
No, I'm not denying the precedent, Andy. I'm not even saying that I was being irrational. Like, I was probably irrationally confident and calm in this moment that they weren't going to blow this game. I'd already pre-written the blurb for the podcast, you know, like posting the audio. Like, I wasn't even concerned. I don't know why. I probably should have been, but I will give them a little leeway, because I feel like really what happened here, you talk about, like, it's the last quarter, whatever, before this six-game trip is over. And I don't so much feel like the Lakers just got careless and started throwing the ball around. They were so obviously just trying to run out the clock, like literally to the point where they wouldn't pick up the basketball after many, many made baskets by the Hornets in the fourth quarter, just to get more time to come. It was a prevent offense, and it doesn't matter what sport we're in. The cliche is true: the prevent only prevents you from winning. They clearly wanted, they were sort of done, and they were just trying to run out the clock rather than aggressively finish the trip. I am not, six game trip. I'm not going to beat on them too much for it.
I'm not even looking to beat on them as much as the way they ended up winning this game is in a lot of ways a microcosm of how this six-game road trip that they go 4-2 doesn't necessarily make you feel exceptionally confident about what lies ahead moving forward, despite two of the four wins coming in Boston, in New York, the one in Boston without LeBron and AD, like, and those were really, really impressive wins. But had had they closed out this game with more seriousness, because I tweeted out at Cam Brothers with about like 5 minutes left in the game, this is going to be either a very unserious win or an unserious loss. Either way, this is unserious. Had they been more serious in the way they closed this game, closed out both the game and the road trip, I'm not saying that I would have declared all problems heretofore solved, because I'm not an idiot, but I would have felt like, okay, this is a statement to some degree about the seriousness with which we are going to be taking basketball from this day forward.
I get it.
That it didn't happen doesn't make me think that the wins against Boston and New York were fraudulent, because they weren't. Mm. It just speaks to why you never quite know what the hell is going on with
that. Okay, I can see that. I can see where you're coming from there. Even if I don't entirely agree, I certainly see it. I do want to mention this. There were people, Andy, who were complaining. You know, not everybody, but there were a few voices around the NBA media sphere, social media sphere, or whatever, that were complaining that Anthony Davis was an all-star, named as a reserve over teams like with players with, you know, teams on better records. You know, the you know, Sabonis and Fox from Sacramento with a better record than the Lakers and all these kinds of stuff. I think a game like Mondays kind of illustrates why Anthony Davis isn't just an all-star, but playing at a level that if the Lakers had five more wins, we'd be talking about him like he's the MVP of the league. 26 points, 15 rebounds, 11 assists. He was 12 of 16 from the field. He had a crucial block of Miles Bridges on a three-pointer from like half court. It seemed like Bridges was trying to get this ball up. One of
Bridges, who by the way had been destroying the Lakers.
Oh yeah, finished with 41 points.
He destroyed him and Brandon Miller, particularly Miller in the second half. Those two went to town on the Lakers.
Yeah, they had 74 of Charlotte's 118 points between the two of them. That's good. Anthony Davis put in another performance. When you take all of this together, he was a plus 16 on the night. That indicates to you that not only is he the best player on the Lakers, and I don't think there's any doubt about that, he is playing at a level that is as good as anybody in the NBA. The Lakers aren't rewarding him for that. They're only two games over 500. But if he was playing like in, say, second team or third team all NBA caliber, which is still really damn good, the Lakers would be three or four games under 500.
Here's the thing about AD and his all-star candidacy before we go to the break. AD is absolutely, as you said, worthy of that all-star bid. And respectfully to Domantas Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox and all their stands, he is a better player than either one of them. Like, I don't care about the record. He is a better player than either one of those guys, who, by the way, are damn good players in their own right. Mm-hmm. But they are not as damn good as Anthony Davis. And if you really want to split hairs on this thing and complain about AD being an all-star, if it was one or the other between him and LeBron, AD is actually the one more worthy of the all-star bid. If you have to pick one or the other, LeBron got voted in. And you know what? The all-star game is about giving the people what they want. The people want to see LeBron. And I don't blame him for wanting to see LeBron, because LeBron's really awesome to watch, particularly in this format where it doesn't matter and he can just entertain.
Like, I do not want to live in a world where we are so precious about our all-star games. First of all, the real solution here is why all-star rosters are still 12 is mind-boggling to me. They should not be smaller than an actual NBA roster. Put 15 people on this thing, and that would solve a lot of problems right away. But I don't want to live in a world where we stop allowing fans and players who also vote for LeBron, all this stuff, to put LeBron James at age 39 in his 21st season, right?
Yep.
Into the All-Star game.
20 straight All-Star.
It's like, because I remember, like, you think somehow, like, you know, it's not fair to De'Aaron Fox.
sorry. A, LeBron is playing at an all-star level, but B, sorry, it's an all-star game.
I remember in 2011, I think it was 2011, the last time Kobe did an all-star game at Staples Center. And Kobe very clearly wanted to win MVP of that all-star game that was going to be his last time in LA. And everybody in that crowd wanted Kobe to win all-star MVP in what was going to be his last all-star game in LA. And all of the players on his team knew this, and they were all feeding the hell out of him. You know why? Because everybody was giving everyone what they wanted, mm-hmm. and that's fine. Like, you didn't hurt the integrity of the all-star game. No, you elevated it because Kobe put on a show, and that's what everyone wanted.
All right. I totally agree with you. Go back and watch the footage of that game. It was super fun.
Yeah.
I do. You mentioned about, you know, whether or not the boss, I want to ask you if the Boston game, because I'm starting to think more about it, whether or not this fundamentally changed the arc of the Lakers season, this win in Boston on, you know, last week. So let's get to that next, and an update on Jared Vanderbilt, and not a kind of an optimistic one. So all of that coming up next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by FanDuel, and happy Super Bowl to all who celebrate from FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. And if you're like me, Super Bowl Sunday is about the best seat on the couch. You got to have an armrest. You got to have either a coffee table in front of you or an end table to the side, somewhere to put all of your food and your beverages. Get yourself in the perfect mindset to place some super bets. I personally love a parlay, get a little creative, live a little bit on the edge. And FanDuel has so many different ways for you to end the season with a W or a two or a three. Boy, back in my prime, I loved me a parlay. Not only can you bet on who will win Super Bowl 58, but FanDuel also has bets for which players will score a touchdown and so much more. New customers join today and you get $200 in bonus bets if your first bet of $5 or more wins. Again, just $5, and then you're set. Go to FanDuel.com/lockedon to sign up today. And that's FanDuel.com/lockedon. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL.
Okay, so I like you, Andy. I'm not going to go ahead and go all in and be like, you know, they're back, baby. You know, they're 4-2 trip, two games over 500 for the first time since ironically beating the Hornets in late December. Two games over 500. Here we go. But I am willing to, I've been thinking a lot about this game, this Boston game. And look, they got the trade deadline coming up and we're going to talk about D'Angelo Russell, if not a ton in this show, certainly leading up to the deadline, because D'Lo put up 28 points to lead the team, was their only reliable three-point shooter on Monday, kind of made his case to maybe stay around a little bit after the deadline. If the Lakers, I'm not willing to say the Lakers are back. What I am willing to say is this: if the Lakers do in fact turn it around and mount like a serious run of good play over this last, you know, 30 games or whatever it is, I think there's like no chance that we won't look back at the Boston game and be like, that was the turning point.
Yeah.
That was Darvin, like, if it's going to happen, that was the game that turned them.
Darvin talked after this game tonight about the strong reaction from this team after the back-to-back losses in Houston, in Atlanta, and beyond the particulars of those games. And you and I spent about 48 hours criticizing the hell out of Darvin Ham's minutes allotment for LeBron, especially, but AD as well, and D'Lo, Reeves, the starters. But it was disappointing in those guys' performances as well. And, you know, that was around when you had the LOL tweet from Christian Wood and LeBron's time, you know, hourglass time's up. And there could have been an opportunity for guys to really mentally fold up the tents or really put the Lakers in a position where they have to make moves, not even because it's the best thing to do, because they feel like this is our best way to at least try to put a Band-Aid on something that's starting to bleed profusely. And Darvin said afterwards he thought that his reaction you know, the win against Boston, the win against New York, the way they played, he said, played for each other over these last three games. He said, we're in it for the fight. And, you know, that really reassured him about this team's mentality moving forward, that they're not, they've dealt with a lot of adversity, some of it out of their control, some of it self-inflicted, but they have never, in his mind at least, given up. And that matters.
It does. I mean, what's interesting about that was I was very interested in what Darvin was saying about that after the game, because I do think it is true. They have not quit on each other, whether or not they have they have the faith in each other. They have the faith in the guys in the room. Whether they have the faith in him, I think, is certainly an open question. But my other part about this that I was really thinking about is, obviously, you know, the Lakers were a double-digit underdog from our, you know, based on our the line from our friends at FanDuel before the game started, before we learned that LeBron and AD weren't going to play. And that bumped up to like 15 and a half or something like that. I wonder if the fact, what enabled that performance, because you put it perfectly after the game. I think you tweeted it out. We talked about it on the podcast. It was like one of the only games you've ever seen where nobody took a playoff. Yep. That doesn't mean they played every play perfectly. It means they didn't take a playoff. They tried to fight through screens. They did every little thing they did. They were on the floor for loose balls. They pushed back when Boston made pushes. They did all of that stuff. And I don't know if that happens if either of the stars play. I think what opened the opportunity for them to get the kind of win that they had in the context of the two games leading up, where, you know, they were blown out, then AD misses a game and LeBron is overworked and all that kind of stuff. If one of those guys is on the floor, I don't know if you get quite the same level of desperation. Then they turn around in New York and kind of repeated it, but this time with the stars. And, you know, I'm not saying they'd put out exactly the same effort on Monday against the Hornets as they did in those two other games.
Well, I'm here to tell you they didn't, Brian.
Right. I'm not going to say that. But for the most part, until they really tried too hard to run out the clock, that was a very professionally played, efficient game where they were taking a bad team and beating them. Like, you know, pretty convincingly. They were up by 10 to 15, 15 to 18 for most of the game, and they were in control of it until they got a little too cute. I think it was the fact that it was the reserves playing without their stars that showed again what this needs to look like. It was Jared Vanderbilt playing like he did in the first half and then being unable to play and requiring everybody now to go and pick up that mantle so that they don't give away this thing that they were building. It's one of these quirky things that happens in sports where sometimes the worst circumstances, it doesn't usually work out this way. Usually the wounded animal is the first one to get eaten. It is not the most dangerous animal in the animal kingdom. But in this case, I really do think just the whole nature of it is what allowed it to happen. And if the Lakers do turn it around, that was the game that did it.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Vando. Darvin after the game, I'm paraphrasing him a little bit, but he said that the beautiful way about how Vando had been playing, you know, in that game against the Knicks, but also just really the last few weeks where Vando's been terrific, whether they won or lost, was just he had been playing at such a high intensity and energy level and just going all out. And he said that is a representation of how they want to play. Mm-hmm. And I think we've seen at times that is how this team has played. And when they do crank it up to that level, and finding the ways to do that can be complicated. Talked about this before in certain respects because of what is required to get LeBron at this stage of his career through an entire season and the asks on AD tonight, notwithstanding, he was amazing. He was pretty incredible defensively against the Knicks, but I think the asks have caught up to him a little bit in terms of just his overall energy. I think he's been bringing it, but I think it's been harder for him.
And he's clearly still banged up. I mean, he's not playing healthy right now.
And, you know, not having Jared Vanderbilt as that type of sort of energy North Star, I think is going to make things difficult. You know, I mean, say what you will about Cam Reddish, and I know you have, but Cam plays with a lot of energy.
It's not just like, me.
No, well, on this show, it is primarily you. Well, but
right, but I mean, but the, you know, there, I have
sure
friends but, on this with this POV,
right? But I, what I was going to say though is, regardless of what you think of Cam Reddish as a player, low energy is not his problem. Reddish plays with a lot of energy, and you know, I think there's a certain intensity that they were expecting from Gabe Vincent that they obviously have not had all year because he's been hurt all year. So they're going to have to find ways to manufacture this, because the truth is this team is not talented enough to flip a switch.
No.
Like they have to keep the dimmer really high for most of the season to bring the best out of themselves. And if they want to at least try to get out of the play-in, they're going to have to play really well for these next
there's
like 30 games, whatever it is.
There's no question. It kind of recasts Prince a little bit in a hustle and energy role, particularly if Darvin can keep his minutes where they ought to be. And then Monday night, he played 20 minutes. And, you know, Rui came back in and closed the game. And, he, you know, they kind of did things in a way that logically made sense based on the starting lineup that they had. It made sense on Saturday for Taurean to play. It made sense on Monday for Rui to play, and that's what they did. But it also, I feel like it changes the vibe a little bit from Prince. Everyone can kind of slot in and maybe make up for little bits of what they're not going to get from Vanderbilt. But we'll update that injury and we'll talk D'Lo next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by BetterHelp. And sometimes we all need the opportunity to get something off our chest. Big or small, certain things can really start to get to you. And it's important to let that out, especially to someone who's unbiased in your life. Like we, for example, we do this show that we hope is a really nice escape from real life for all of our listeners, all of our viewers. You love the Lakers. I happen to love the Lakers as much as all of you love the Lakers. And there can be a stress release from enjoying a Lakers game. There can also be stress created by watching a Lakers game. And for a diehard fan, myself, it can sometimes feel like life or death, but we all know there are more pressing issues than a purple and gold win or loss. And most of us have bigger problems than our favorite sports team. And it's important to get those things off your chest every now and then. And for those issues, it can be huge to talk with a professional. Like I can speak to how much therapy helped me during a really difficult period in my life for me and my family. It was a game changer, and it can be different for everyone. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be flexible, suited to your schedule. Visit BetterHelp.com/LockedOnNBA to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/LockedOnNBA.
Before we get to D'Lo, the Lakers basically said before the game that after consultations with doctors and this and that, where it seemed like Vanderbilt might be out for weeks and people were talking about potential for season-ending surgery. Excuse me. Now it's looking at least like there's a chance that it could be shorter than that. He's going to be he was diagnosed with a midfoot sprain and is going to be reevaluated again in 3 to 4 weeks, at which point we'll see what happens. But that is a far more optimistic timeline than what they were, you know, anything that was coming out over the last day or two.
Yeah. I mean, just that we are not at the surgery point is reassuring. And, or let me put it this, reassuring might be the wrong word because you never know where this is going to land, but it is a relief to know, if nothing else, we have not already landed on surgery out for the season. SOL.
Cause that's what it looked like.
Yeah.
You know, up till Monday morning.
There had been reports that, you know, ESPN, among other people, there in outlets, there had been reports that season-ending surgery was something that, if nothing else, was a concern of possibility. And that, you know, I don't know if Vando went to the LeBron of feet doctors, you know, I suppose the fellow, you know, fellow clutch clients get that referral, but hopefully they will have Jared Vanderbilt back, because his absence in the first 20 games, as I kept pointing out, I think really reinforced his value. And then we saw what I thought would be the case once he was back, and once he really got himself revved up and back to speed physically. He's a really important, in a lot of ways, singular part of this team. They're going to miss him.
Just the idea that maybe, possibly, he might be back before the end of the season is very encouraging. So whether or not Vanderbilt, we see him before the end of the year is one thing. Whether or not we see D'Lo again in a Lakers uniform, at least until the next time he's traded back, that is going to be a major storyline between today and Thursday at the deadline. He is still the frontline player and featured in trades like for DeJounte Murray, or start talking about Bruce Brown, guys like that. And he put up a pretty good argument for staying on Monday. He was the only shooter that the Lakers had who could make a three-pointer, 5 of 12 from three-point range, led the team with 28 points. He had 6 assists. He played a very, very solid game, 10 of 21 from the floor. He continues to play well.
To put in perspective, when you say he was the only Laker that could make threes with any consistency, he was 5 of 12. The rest of the team was 3 of 22. Like they were
bad.
They were 23.5% with D'Lo going almost 50% at volume from the field. So this really was a night where he was the only one who had it going. His, you know, Austin Reeves led the team in assists. He tied, actually, I should say.
Anthony, he and AD, yeah.
Yeah, he and AD. Might be a career high for Austin Reeves. It tied a career high for AD, who had 8 in the first half. Like, he was, particularly those first 24 minutes, AD was dealing. But you see some of the passes and the reads that D'Lo makes. Like, some of these are really next level. There was a sequence where LeBron swung the ball basically from one side of the arc to the other to D'Lo. And right as this was happening, AD starts cutting down the lane, and D'Lo whips what is essentially like a touch pass perfectly to AD, setting him up. And that's something that D'Lo is just anticipating right away. Like, this is the thing that's going to be happening, or he's recognizing it in real time, whatever. He had a few passes in this game, and I thought also against Boston and New York, where you're watching this going, like, top of his game, man, he's a hell of a playmaker. Like, you know, he's not LeBron, but he's pretty good in his own right.
Well, that's what gets tricky about trading, particularly now. Like, what makes this so hard? The job that Pelinka has is so hard now, because you can't, with what the Lakers have available to them, it is very unlikely you can really fill two holes with clear upgrades where you're going to say, like, I mean, like, is Royce O'Neal a handy player to have around? Sure. Like, he is. There's no question. He can be very effective in the right role. Is Tyus Jones like a handy guy to have? Yes. But like, those are not upgrades. Like, to find an upgrade over D'Angelo Russell to trade him the way he's playing now is really difficult. So if you move him, you kind of need to at least try to replace the skill set, or you could be creating other problems with, you know, by trying to solve them. So like, DeJounte Murray doesn't fill all the playmaking roles, but at least he slots into like the same position. It's going to be hard to trade D'Lo for Dorian Finney-Smith unless you're bringing in another point guard that can playmake or something like that. Like, you now require two moves, and it's just a reminder that, yes, D'Lo is a flawed player, and there are better players out there than him. And yes, from a like balance sheet standpoint, it might make more sense to have DeJounte Murray, where you have some certainty going forward and you can plan your roster and all that kind of stuff. But I gotta believe that for most people, we are well past the point where everybody just says, just trade him because you automatically get better because D'Lo is gone. Like, we're way past that.
I doubt it. No, we're not. because even if you don't think DeJounte Murray is that much better than D'Angelo Russell as a player, I can promise you that there are fans and there are pundits who believe in DeJounte Murray more than D'Lo as a playoff player. And I'm not saying they should or shouldn't. I'm just saying that's a thing. So yeah. I disagree with you that we're past that.
Well, no, I didn't mean that to say that the idea that you're not going to possibly upgrade like that. You can absolutely upgrade over him. I just mean this idea that there were for so much of the time, especially at the beginning of the year, there was this concept that almost like D'Angelo was, you know, just the trade is addition by subtraction.
Sure.
And you know, he has shown that it is, if nothing else, he has modeled skill sets that the Lakers are lacking. So if they trade him for a forward, if you trade him for Bruce Brown, I'm just making up names, or Dorian Finney-Smith, or whatever it might be, you need to bring back playmaking, because otherwise you are dependent on Austin Reeves and point forward Anthony Davis and LeBron to do all of that. And that's really tricky.
I'm not disagreeing with your analysis here, like the way you're reading the board. I don't disagree with you at all. I'm disagreeing with the idea that the masses are now in belief that D'Angelo Russell has proven himself non-expendable, or that you can't have that upgrade over him, because he is a player that I don't think most people buy into. That's my premise. But the reality is, to me, in a perfect world, you try to add DeJounte Murray to D'Lo and to Reeves. And what would really help the Lakers would be if they could somehow trade Gabe Vincent a few times, because he's the most expendable contract they have in terms of guys that you're not anticipating playing a role with this season at all. Like there's no indication that Gabe Vincent, when he's going to be back, if he's going to be back. I don't get a sense that there's any clarity inside that building. If you could trade Gabe Vincent, or if say you had two Gabe Vincents on this team and you could move them both and you had enough sweeteners for both, that would be the ideal way to try to do this. Because when they traded Russ before, his contract was so big, by definition, you knew you were going to be increasing your depth, because it was going to take that many players.
You're going to end up getting like five guys back.
Just right. I mean, like, how many other $47 million players were there in the league that their team wanted to move? Like,
right.
So by definition, you were going to increase your depth. The Lakers are in a position right now where they need to try to increase that depth if possible, and it's going to be difficult through the market. So we'll see.
All right. So we'll be catching up on obviously all the rumors, everything that happens. Should news break, we will break with it and record something quickly and get that up for everybody. We'll see what the Lakers do. Will they be really busy? Will they be kind of let it go by and wait for the summer? It has been very quiet so far. And there aren't a ton of marquee players really available out there. It's going to be, I don't know how
active. DeJounte Murray's the biggest.
Yeah, he is. And Bruce Brown's probably right behind him. So,
or I guess,
we'll see what happens. And so we'll get you ready for the trade deadline. We'll get you ready for Thursday night, the unveiling of the Kobe statue, which is going to be an obviously super emotional night in Los Angeles and really around the basketball universe. So we'll get you ready for that. Plenty to look forward to over the course of the week. Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you can go hang out with over 23,000 now subscribers to the channel. Appreciate all the everydayers and the first listeners and all that. We'll see you tomorrow.